So I think that's really the purpose of content. It is as much an act of philanthropy as it is of marketing, I think, for brands.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. I'm thrilled to be joined by David Ebner, president of Content Workshop, to discuss content marketing, attribution, and all things measurement of content marketing, and whether or not it all matters. So David, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Awesome. David, we are big Content Workshop fans at The Juice. I've heard your story, your background from you a few times. I think it's really fascinating how you kind of evolved from where you started to where you are now. So in your own words, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, a little bit about Content Workshop and how it all came to be.
Yeah, for sure. Again, thanks for having me, Jonathan. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited that you're a fan of Content Workshop, too. I think that I hold that close to my heart. So, you know, it was 11 years ago on a sunny afternoon in Tampa, Florida. But essentially, I was a graduate student at the University of Tampa studying to get my MFA in creative writing. And there were a few other writers in the group, too, that were all doing some freelance copywriting because there's not a whole lot of ways to use that skill set and make money unless you're like name your favorite author here, right? So we decided to band together instead of freelancing separately, but do it under the umbrella of a company name. And at that time, we were actually Content Writer Workshop because all we did was copywriting. That has changed over time, right? But we're really a co-op of freelancers. And moreover, and even to this day, we are a bunch of artists in disguise as a content company agency, right? If there was the appropriate like glasses and nose and mustache that would work for that scenario, we would buy one for every member of our team because we really do care about the art side, so much so that we all, you know, went to school, we're classically trained artists first, content creators second. So that has evolved over the last 11 years. The company has grown significantly. Back then, storytelling wasn't really, you know, starting to be a burgeoning topic for marketing. Today, it's used so much, it's lost its meaning, which we can talk more about later. But that's what we hold to heart, right? So yeah, 11 years later, you know, we're a pretty good size agency, still focusing on the art of things, still focusing on the storytelling, letting that be what guides then the science of content marketing.
I love that. I love the idea of like 11 copywriters like binding together and like us against the world a little bit. I love that mission and vision and excited to dive into storytelling. So, but first, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. And we always like starting by asking our guests, what are they drinking nowadays? What are they enjoying nowadays? What about yourself?
Yeah. So in honor of that, I've got my crystal. I don't know if this is actually crystal, but I've got a glass here, a rocks glass. And I actually have a whole bar set back here. There's no actual alcohol there. There was at one point, and then that was like, that is too destructive for a day's work, right? We are not reliving Mad Men here in this glass cube of an office, but I'm a big bourbon fan. I like the story behind like a good rare bourbon. Obviously, there's plenty that are hard to find. There's plenty that are inflated. There are the ones that you can get everywhere that are just really good and inexpensive, which is fantastic. But lately, my favorite is really anything from the Orphan Barrel series. Their bourbons are quite good. Barter House was my favorite. I can't find that. If anybody is listening to this podcast and can get their hands on Barter House bourbon, send me a LinkedIn message because you have a friend and a potential buyer, illegal or no. I want that my hands on that bourbon. So that's my cocktail.
I love it. We can you and I can probably record a black market bourbon podcast episode separately because I lived in Kentucky for several years and got into the bourbon culture down there and still find myself enjoying it somewhat regularly. That's awesome.
I was going to say we actually opened this is a little side tangent, but we opened a second office for our agency in Lexington because we have a couple of clients that are there. And it also is a great way to write off a trip to go to a distillery. So yes. I'm there with you.
Bourbon Trail is awesome. And I do agree, some of the storytelling in the bourbon world and, you know, a lot of it factual, some of it blurs the line a little bit, but a lot of good brands, a lot of good stories there. So let's use that as a segue. You mentioned storytelling. My current soapbox, and I've said this even on previous episodes, is it's become this like mantra of the masses that great content converts, but I actually like don't think it does. And we have some data from our platform to prove that, that, you know, it actually takes 162 days for a piece of content to convert. And on average, it's over two pieces of content that actually drive a conversion. So I would say great content should educate and or entertain. But you've even like through your 11 years with Content Workshop, it's really storytelling that drove you into the business of content marketing, as you mentioned. And I think content marketing's changed a lot in those last 10, yeah. 11, 15 years, whatever it may be. From your perspective, like, and from Content Workshop's perspective, like, it sounds like a very existential question, but what's the point of content marketing? Is the goal conversion when you're working on it? Is it storytelling? Is it some blurred combination of both? What are we doing here?
The goal depends on who you're telling the story to, right? I mean, as somebody who worked in-house in the past, like, you have to justify the work that you're doing to your executives. And the higher ups want it to be a conversion-based exercise. But content is, it's like dating, okay? So take me back, I've been married for a few years, but taking me back to my dating days, right? Like, you go on a series of dates, never one date you're like, yep, I did that date, we're getting married. That's it after the first date, right? Like, the idea that a piece of content is going to convert somebody is like saying you go on one date and you that person will be convinced to marry you, right? The content is value being supplied to a relationship, right? So everybody has an audience. A great member of our team once told me that you don't have just one brand. You have as many brands as you have audience members. The brand lives in the heart and mind of the individual, not in the brand. So you can try to influence that relationship as much as you want. And that's brand building 101, right? That's all the things that we do, but that's all you're doing is influencing it. So content influences the relationship that a brand has with its target audience. That influence should be positive. If you're providing them value, it's going to be positive. You have to build trust in that avenue as well too, which is like regular reoccurrence. Cadence of your content actually matters, I believe, right? But the idea that content's going to convert is kind of ridiculous. It's like as if there's the funnel. We all love the antiquated marketing funnel, which I have ideas on too. But the idea is that a piece of content's going to meet somebody at, you know, the whatever stage, and that they're going to go to the next stage just because they engaged in it. Come on, like, we're not going to force people to move through the funnel or the pipeline. You can't force them. Anybody who's worked in sales knows if you try to force it, it falls apart. Nobody wants to buy something because they're backed into a corner. Nobody wants to be forced to hear a bunch of rhetoric that doesn't provide them value. So just keep helping and providing value. So I think that's really the purpose of content. It is as much an act of philanthropy as it is of marketing, I think, for brands. It's your job. It's your responsibility, because you can, to provide value other than just selling things to people. And that builds true affinity with a brand. And that's what content's supposed to do. It's part of the buyer's journey. There's no question. You can see the engagement, the touches, but you're not a piece of content converting people. There's no one piece of content that does that I've seen. Now, I would love to be proven wrong. So please, again, LinkedIn messages are the way to get a hold of me. Send me something, say this piece converted everybody who's ever touched it, right? I'd love to see that.
Yes, you and me both, put me in there as well. I love that act of philanthropy. We coach a lot of our customers a lot of times. They're like, what should we create content on? It's like, give away what you know. People love templates. People love toolkits. Like, and you're right, it is philanthropy. You're literally helping others, you know, be better at their job, be better at what they're trying to accomplish, be better at growing their business, growing their career. I think that's such a cool lens to look at content through. To maybe put you on the spot a little bit and somewhat related to that, like, I agree with you. Acts of philanthropy, storytelling. Sometimes we're writing about things that actively like aren't that romantic, aren't that sexy. I know you guys have a lot of customers in the cyber space, right? How do you make something that's not inherently fun and exciting and lending itself to compelling storytelling? How do you tell stories that are compelling?
Jonathan, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, sure. It's not going to be sexy and exciting to you and me, but it really can be to the target audience, right? If you work all day in a field, we get to work in a fun field. Like, we get to do content all day long and talk about content and storytelling. That's all great. But some people don't do that. They work in a field that's more technical, that's more analytical, that's a little bit more dollars and cents, right? And to us, it seems unsexy and not exciting, but to them, to learn something new about the thing that they've put their passion and time and their career into, that's going to be pretty exciting to most people. Storytelling isn't about subject matter, right? Storytelling is about narrative flow, arc, heroes. It's about overcoming challenges. It's about, you know, outcomes and benefits and lives being improved. Although some topics are harder to do that in, any topic really can have positive storytelling. What it comes down to more than not is how brave is the brand? How brave are they willing to be to go out on a limb with their storytelling? Are they trying to stay very close to some sort of rigidity that is very just matter of fact, just the facts, ma'am? Or are they okay going on a little bit of a journey with their brand to truly tell a story? In cyber, we see a lot of people like to, there's a lot of heroes and villains in cyber, right? Literally, there are heroes and villains. We got the US military fighting cyber criminals in a lot of regards. So heroes and villains. But, you know, so what that marketing lends to. Around this very serious topic, but you can have a lot of fun if you truly understand who the target audience is and just bake them into the equation first. I think you can do some cool stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I think being brave is right as well. The path of least resistance is to create content that looks like everyone else's, right?
Yep.
Just like fit in. I think the braver you are and the further you wander from the path, the more powerful it can be. There's obviously risk associated with that as well, but I think there's a lot of return associated there also. How do you encourage your clients or just anybody listening to measure success with content marketing? If the goal is really powerful, compelling storytelling, do you even need to measure success? Well, what does success look like for strong content in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest question to answer. I'll tell you today, as much as there is a lot of pressure for efficiency, like last year was the year of efficiency for Meta and a lot of other companies, which meant just like cutting budget, right? Like, can we do more with less? That doesn't pan out well for content, right? Because content is a measure of like passion. So you cannot do more with less. I mean, you can, I guess, using some tools that are out there today, which we'll talk more about later, I'm sure. But it really depends on what the goal is of the client. And clients, when they come to us, very seldomly are KPIs like a major part of the conversation. We actually have to bring it up to them more than they bring it up to us. They have goals. They have goals around a certain number of leads, you know, whatever their influence on revenue is, which is great. But we have to back them into, okay, how are we going to measure the work that we're doing against those goals? Because in the end, whether it's us or not, we're going to be held accountable that the work that we do and the money they spend with us is going to help them reach those goals. So we do a lot of KPI work with attribution models. You've seen every single one under the sun, right? You've got your V, your W, your U, your first, last, your whatever. You got the multi attributions. And that's great. And measuring a piece of content's part in that overall plan and strategy, that's a great way to measure a touch, essentially. If you're really looking to get that bottom of the funnel pain point client in the front door that is your website, then SEO is still a great way to do that, right? So your KPI might be ranking, it might be organic traffic. It's become more a fight for the smaller portions in SEO is what I've seen for a lot of the teams we work with. We're not looking for the keyword phrases to bring 1,000 people to the site a month. We're looking for the keyword phrase that is super long and brings 10 people a month. But if you rank number one, you get all 10 of those. They're all like at a hyper buying mode because they're searching something so pivotal. Those are really the KPIs a lot of our clients are looking for today is touch and a certain amount of visits to that piece of content, that content's effectiveness in the funnel. We have clients who want sales enablement tools. A lot of people forget that sales needs content too. So just being able to have a reason to reach out to a stalled lead. Hey, I read this and I thought of you. Here's a piece of value. That is hugely successful in the process. So again, they're all measuring it differently. They're all, you know, have a different idea. They're all trying to back into revenue one way or another. It's just how they actually get there. So that's not a good answer to your question. But the only answer I have, Jonathan, is that it kind of really, it's all over the place today. Yeah. Maybe that is speaking more of the fact that they're not coming saying like, I need this piece to do X. and being very precise about that measurement, maybe people are adopting this concept of content as part of their philanthropy, as part of goodwill that they do for society and for their client base. And they know that it's the right thing to do. They know they engage in content. They know their executives engage in it. So they know it's part of the process.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit, as we've said in the past, squishy. We'll squish
it. Yeah, very squishy. It's easy, in air quotes, to measure pipeline, right? It's really difficult to measure affinity, like I think you talked about earlier, and like that brand affinity you're building. So I think sometimes we revert to measuring what's easy, and then that ends up driving what we end up creating and why we're creating and all of that. I want to come back to your SEO topic, but before we dive into that, I'm super curious on your perspective, because like you mentioned, you're an artist, which I think is really powerful. We actually see some of the best content marketers we work with are former journalists. And I think they come at it from a different lens that is equally powerful, right? They know how to ask good questions. They know how to research. They know how to tell the story arc, where I think sometimes if people just get into content marketing via marketing or studying marketing, like they're more interested in the business side of it. But I think a lot of times what happens is creatives or artists who get into content will get this top-down pressure of, okay, what does this mean for pipeline? How many leads is this going to generate? And it kind of rattles them or moves them so far away from what they love, which is creating in the art of storytelling. What would you tell to somebody who's maybe sitting in that seat that's trying to balance both storytelling and this attribution? I apologize. I feel like I'm maybe asking you the same question over and over again in different ways, but I just think you're like, artist and creative lens is so interesting and so powerful, and part of what makes you different and successful in the space.
Yeah, that's tough. I was on a podcast recently that was for freelancers, and it was asking the same question, like, how do you like weigh both sides of the fence here, right? Because you have to, essentially you're sitting on top of the dang thing, right? You're, and unfortunately it's not super comfortable, I'm sure, right? And you're getting forces from both sides. You've got to do what your it's easy for me to say in my chair in Clearwater, Florida, and I run an agency, right? And I've made it to where I am in life, but you have to do what you're passionate about, because if you're not, it will come out in the content. We read so many pieces from the writers that we work with, and some things we just have to send back because it's obvious they're not interested in this. So by nature, as an artist, if you want to be a good artist and a good content creator, there's a few like crossover attributes, right? You have to be curious by nature. You have to be. And if you're not curious, that's where journalists become great. They're great content marketers. They like to do research. They are curious. They probe a bit deeper. Mm-hmm. So the same is true for an artist. They have to be curious about the human nature, the human condition, chaos theory. They have to be curious about those things. And if they are, then that will translate into whatever they do. These attributes are why they became an artist or why they became a journalist, not something they learned over time. Those are not learned attributes. Yeah. You can't learn to be curious, right? So anyway, I would say go where your passion lies. There is a translation, though. There's this hump that artists have to get over, and journalists too, if they want to come into this space. And we've met many. A lot of our writers have master's degrees. They're artists. We've met many that can't make that leap from the art to the commercial side of things, because they believe that, and rightfully so as an artist, that there should not be these guardrails on their creative voice. And when you're writing for a brand and they're paying you, you certainly can have an authorial voice. There's no question about it, but like the rest of the piece has got to be owned by the brand. So you've got to melt who you are into that brand a little bit and do both things. And some people just can't do it. And it's probably the same people who get that pressure, don't know how to react to that pressure, and probably fizzle out a little bit, is that they kind of let the guardrails be defining as to whether or not they can accomplish it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think maybe going back to your dating analogy earlier, there's got to be compromise, right? A little bit from both ways. So it's really good. Okay, you did mention SEO earlier. We can't have a podcast in 2024. Especially on marketing, without talking AI, SEO, generative AI. What are the impacts here? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? I think you shared a good analogy with me when we met in person. You're not in the game of predictions. You like others to knock over the wall and you get a step over it. But kind of on SEO, AI, what are you seeing happening in the space right now?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. Well, leading up to ChatGPT, the giant elephant in the room, let's talk about the before and the after, right? Yeah. SEO was already changing quite a bit, right? There were not just updates, but the difficulty to rank, like there's just so many more people coming to a smaller pie, right? There's only so many keywords. There's a ton of companies starting every day. They all want to rank on specific keywords. So the difficulty rating in those that aren't producing content versus those that are, the gap is just huge now, right? And that was before ChatGPT, right? So what we started to see is not just people wanting to rank on lower volume keywords, but the difficulty meant we had to commit to a certain amount of lift over time, which made backlink building like such a prominent part of the it's always been, but it's even more prominent now. And it's tough to explain that to a client. Like, whoa, you're going to write a piece and it's not going to live on my site. It's like, yes, here's what all this stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it was already changing. And then you introduce ChatGPT generative search. And now there's just all this unknown. It's a little bit silly to think that Google and Bing, they're all going to walk away from their most profitable products to change how people search. And now there's no longer a system around serving people a bunch of websites that they can also monetize that part of the process. That's their entire revenue model. I know these are sub brands as large as part of larger brands, but you think Google's going to stop serving ads?
Yeah.
And if they are going to serve ads, it's going to be based off of terminology. And if it's based off of terminology, keywords are still going to matter, mm-hmm. which means content is still going to matter that matches those keywords. That domain authority is still going to matter. I think there's some sort of compromise in the middle there. They allowed for a while there. I know they've changed the name now. It's not Bard anymore, right? Google changed the name to...
Yeah, I'm blanking on it now. Is it Gemini?
Yeah, they did a great... Yes, Gemini. I'm about to say they did a great branding job if the two of us can't...
yeah, right? Sitting here. Yeah.
But they changed... They launched that generative search beta, and I signed up for it, and I did not like it. So... It's just a bad user experience, which is not what Google does.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm sure that's all still going to be important. We might lose some traffic, but you know, that we lost a lot of clicks when they introduced the infinite scroll, right? Like mm-hmm. that,
yeah.
that our impressions shot through the roof and everybody was like, wow, this is going to be great. But is it truly an impression? Like it's not the same type of impression you got before. So I don't know. Again, we met in person not long ago, and I said, you know, I don't want to be the first one that goes through the wall. I don't need to predict the future. I just need to be close enough to be the second one that after that wall is knocked over and that person's all bloody and they'll be rewarded for that work. I can just like step over it and be like, okay, I'm here too. So I'll be that I'm here too guy.
When you told me that, like, you kind of relieved a little bit of pressure for me because it's like, yeah, just be prepared, right? Like, you don't need to be in the game of predicting and thinking you're going to be right and then you'd be wrong, or like you said, kind of bloodying yourself trying to figure out, predict where this ball is going. Just be ready to go wherever it goes. And I think that's really good advice. So appreciate that. All right. The favorite question we like asking everybody, what is one unpopular opinion you have in the marketing or content space?
I might change my mind on this later. So I don't want to, I am not afraid to say that I've changed my mind or there's a better way of doing something.
Good.
Hence my
good
second one to walk through the wall methodology. Yeah. That's perfectly fine. But as it stands today, I still believe that it's okay to gate content. And I know a lot of people don't. I think a lot of it has to do with you. It's a terrible user experience. Let's set that aside for a second. We all know that. But I think the question of gated versus ungated opens up a lot of discussion around the value of the piece you actually created. And there's a lot of people who will create a piece and then ask, should we gate this or not? And it's like, whoa, we've missed the entire point. If your piece of content isn't so valuable that somebody is willing to exchange their contact information, and today more than ever, people realize the value of that. They're going to get a phone call. They're going to get an email. They're going to get, somebody's going to reach out. Then if you haven't already made that decision before you've started making the piece, then I'm sure the piece does not align with that value proposition. Content really is all about, like, it's a barter system. Like mm-hmm. it's the great barter. We're bartering value for that person's time and attention. The most valuable resource they have, whether they know it or not, it's non-renewable. They're not getting any more of it, but we're asking for it and we're asking them to spend that time with our brand. So it's a hot take, and I don't know if I'll always agree with this because the user experience is so clunky and bad usually, but I think it reveals something larger about the question of the content's value that we're creating. And you know, that's the discussion that I like to have when somebody says like, let's not gate it or let's gate it or what should we do with this piece? I'm like, well,
right.
Now we're done. Like,
that's so good. You know, we published a 20-plus page report on gated versus ungated content. Yep. And I was actually pleasantly surprised by the nuance in the conversation. There were not as many people like dying on either hill as I anticipated. We saw of our top 100 brands, over 60% of them were gating content, but they were gating less than 5% of their content. So they were very selective in what they were gating. And I think I'm with you. I think I came out of that report, actually more open to gating the right content than I did going into it. And I think I was actually relieved by that. I kind of expected to come out ungated, you know, we're going to die on this hill, but they just learned a lot from that. So I like that opinion a lot. It's a good one. David, this has been great. If people want to learn more from you or about Content Workshop, what's the best way to do that?
If you go to contentworkshop.com right now and go to our live chat that literally comes directly to my phone, I answer all of our live chat. Maybe I shouldn't say this.
Spam them. But
yeah, it's a little pop-up that says, hey, it's me, David, right? Like, that's me. So message me. I'll talk to you about anything there. Literally, I'm bored quite often. So just message me. LinkedIn is probably the best place to get a hold. Obviously, you can learn a lot about Content Workshop other than just how to message me on our website. So go check that out. But on LinkedIn is the best way for people to connect with me directly. And that's, you know, I'm David J. Ebner. I tell people the J is silent. That's an SEO joke, right? So if you don't put the J in there, you're going to get a bunch of people. There's a furniture artist whose name is David Ebner. And funny enough, I was in the Atlanta Museum of Art not that long ago, and I came across a piece, and there was staring right in front of me was my name on a plaque next to a piece of art. This furniture was beautiful. It was an onion it was like a coat rack. Anyway, shout out to David Ebner, the furniture artist. But yeah, David J. Ebner is the way you can find me.
I love that. We'll be sure to reach out on LinkedIn in your chat if we have any questions about anything today or if we have some bourbon bottles we need to send you. David, thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. We'll see everybody next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same place. Cheers.